What is up, everybody? This is Marshall from Limited Resources, and you are listening to Seven Land Hand.
It's Seven Land Hand!
Woohoo!
Brought to you by Good Games Cannington
and Rockingham.
It's less core and more four as Liliana transforms from a Jennifer Connelly lookalike wandering the garden looking for high tea to a sultry necromancer with zombies trying to tuck money into a garter belt. What could do this? Magic Origins could. To make marmalade, you have to spoil a few oranges. To make magic, we're going to be spoiling a few origins. This is Seven Land Hand. With me today, poised over the MTG toaster, to do the stuff with the marmalade, if you weren't following closely, it's Ringwarden Rob Grimsey.
How are we going, guys?
Oh, not as badly as you are. Well, more on that later. And it's Flipkart Kian de Vries Turnell. Flipkarts are back.
And they're all mythics. That means I'm special.
You are. You're very special, Kian. Are you the only healthy one of us here today?
Oh, no. I've been, like, sick for, like, 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. Well, so you might have been the first person to be sick. Or did everyone bring it back from Singapore?
I was, like, sick for a week before Singapore, got better, went to Singapore, came back, got sick again.
Ah. So, in a sense, you have given our Singaporean friends a gift of our disease.
Yeah.
Share some culture when you go over there. That's perfect. That's what you need. Maybe the wrong types of culture.
But... yeah, like phlegm culture.
Bacterial
would be on that.
Culture,
The other type of culture we tried to give them was drinking beers by the pool.
Yeah. We were kicked out every time.
Well,
every time.
When have you ever had a beer, Kian?
Shut up.
Okay. So if we can get through this without hacking coughs and sniffs and snivels, we'll have done well. So, obviously, we went over to Singapore, not myself, but you guys and many others, and totally dominated. Let us know. How did that go?
Oh, total domination. domination.
Well,
how's that land destruction going in modern?
My appraisal of the modern metagame, having played Singapore, is a lot of land destruction decks, a lot of mono-red Blood Moon decks, and a lot of mono-black discard decks. So I was not quite prepared. I didn't tune my deck really against those decks, so I didn't do overly well when I ran into
it. Was there no warning of this being
to be
the metagame?
On the field of basically 1,300 people, I think there was maybe 10 guys playing those decks, and I played three of them, and no one else in our group played any of them. So I think I might have had a miss, like a not the best representative.
So what were the decks that were being played then?
The really, really popular breakout decks from the weekend. The major one was Grishol Brand. I don't know if you've heard of that one. It's like a Grishol Brand reanimated deck. You know Grishol Brand?
Yeah,
7/7 flying guy that draws a million cards.
Of course you do, man.
So they used to always have a deck that reanimated that guy. But the problem was you'd bring him out, you draw 7 cards, maybe you draw 14 cards depending how much damage you've taken. And if you didn't find your combo, you lost the game. But what happened now is this breakout new card called Nourishing Shoal. It effectively lets you exile it and another green card, and you don't have to pay any casting cost, and you gain life equal to the card you've exiled, the casting cost of the card you exiled. So what it does is you use Grishol Brand, you draw your 14 cards, you exile this Nourishing Shoal and a Worldspine Worm, which is a 15 cost green creature, gain 15 life, draw 14 more cards off Grishol Brand, and you can just always find your combo. So all the pros were on this deck. All the guys from Channel Fireball that flew over from the US, all the guys from Star City Games, they were all playing this Grishol Brand, which broke out. None of them won, but they all played it. So
my personal favorite story about this deck is Reed Duke was planning on playing that deck at that tournament.
Yeah.
He lost the deck in transit. I don't know how you managed to do that, but he did. He happened to have his backup deck jund on him, and he top 8'd.
Yeah, all the guys that had the actual deck they wanted to play lost, but he, with his like backup one that he... like was forced to play, top 8 like a champion. So it's good to see.
Reed Duke, solid dude.
Also great to see Reed Duke in real life. You watch him, it's like you're watching the streams live. He talks the same. It's amazing in real life. Oh, dude, it was like seeing your heroes.
Wow. And so did anyone from WA, where'd they get to? Someone came 32nd or something like that, was that right?
We had three guys that made day two. So I think it's like 60 players of the 1,300 make it to day two, I think it was. And we had Luke Williams, did really well, made it through day two. Anthony Lee, who's obviously the superstar Magic player at the moment in Perth, also made it to day two. And then Toby Sams, was it, that also made it through as a third player?
I'm sure there was a guy that finished really high that hadn't been playing for that long, I don't think. Has he been playing for about a year or something like that?
No, I think he's been playing for a while.
It
could be Blake, another guy that did really well on the first day. I don't think not sure if he made it to second day, but Blake Godzemi, I don't know how to say his second name, but Blake's a cool guy, played Tron, if you've heard of that deck. Yeah. You just jam things, hope you turn three Khan people every game. So he did well too.
There was like, I can't remember, but there were 7 or 8 dudes that were playing the winning in the last round, and only 3 of them made it.
Mm.
Yeah, a personal hero, Aaron, did quite well. Lost in the final round. So
Aaron Graham,
the superstar.
Personal hero.
I mean, to all of us. Come on, he's an inspiration. He's an inspiration at good games.
Never heard him referred to like that, have you, Ken? That's bizarre.
So he made it through to basically, he was one win away from making today two. He ended up 6-3, and you needed to have an X and two record. So you needed to go 7-2 to make it. Unfortunately, he made it 6-3, just missed out, but very good effort from Aaron.
Yeah, oh, that's really good. And if you can hear in the background, the store is applauding. And yeah, I think they're applauding you, Rob. That's what it's all about. So we're moving on to the final core set, because it's a core set. Is this a deep sadness, or is this the right call?
Well, it depends what kind of person you are. I mean, I personally hate core sets. I hate core sets so badly. I just never want them to come out.
Yeah.
They're my least favorite sets to play limited in. They're my least favorite sets to go into constructed, usually.
So for you, it's the right call.
I do not like core sets, yeah.
I'm a bit split. I like the 2-2 blocks, but I like the core set because you can just, you know, if I can't play it all year round, it means I can come back and play a core set. I know what I'm doing. I can just play. And then I can just get out as all of the difficult sets come into play. So I'm sort of feeling a little bit about it like that. But hopefully the two block sets will be good in that you can familiarize yourself with the set. And as you get into that third really deep set, it doesn't even happen now. You're moving on to something new. So
yeah, I mean, it works if you're the time you want to play Magic aligns just with the time the core set comes out, right? But if you want to play Magic any other time, then you're kind of screwed if that's how you want to do it.
Well, that's exactly how I felt. Yeah, so hopefully, then maybe it's just going to feel like core set all year round, which would be joyous. Kian?
Core set can die.
I'm
happy it's going to die. I'm not going to miss it.
Yeah.
Go away.
Okay. And but we've got some pretty sweet cards coming up in Origins anyway. It's a good way for it to send out. But although I'm still a bit feeling aggrieved about this whole Origins thing, it feels like it's a bit of a sellout to the Hollywood culture because we've got this impending film, and I think they've really brought this Origins thing around just so that we could know about why Chandra's burning and why, you know, Garak is in the forest doing things and Liliana's bringing people back from the dead. It's like we never needed to know this. I think we've mentioned this before. We never, ever needed to know this. But because a film is coming, we have to know right back to the backstory of these characters.
So, Jada, Dave, are you saying just because they saw that Hollywood's making a lot of money on superhero origin stories that they thought, hey, we could make a lot of money on this? No way. They must be. I'm sure they had this planned for years in advance. I'm sure this was what they always wanted to do. I'm sure it's not just a movie to make a quick buck.
Wasn't you telling me that the only reason why the Planeswalkers came about was because they needed characters? Have you heard about that?
Aaron, I imagine. It would have been Aaron.
That sounds very Aaron.
Yeah, okay, well, let's say Aaron said it. Aaron said, they were going from, card set to card set, and they'd actually been talking with movie people. And they said, okay, well, if we're going to do a movie, who are your characters? And they go, well, we don't really have any. So they invented this Planeswalker thing so that then they could have set characters. And then, you know, a couple of years have gone by, and here it comes, you know, here comes the movie. But it's the same, even with the superhero stories, we don't ever need to really know why. You know, Superman's doing Superman things or Batman's doing Batman things or Spider-Man. But we always have to find out. All the time they're doing these Origins movies.
I mean, the Batman one was so good, though.
I know, the Batman
rocks. The Batman one was amazing, let's be fair.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're saying it happened a few years ago. So, really, maybe the Hollywood guys heard the Magic dudes were doing this and then they got on board on the superhero origin stories to break out before Magic beat them to it. Maybe it's a copycat situation from Magic.
That is definitely what happened, Rob.
Could have happened.
You're seeing through those phlegm-coloured glasses and seeing the truth, my man.
So, what do you think it would take to get one of Magic's Planeswalkers on the Avengers?
On the Avengers?
Yeah. And who would be most suitable?
Well, who would it be? I always want to see Liliana doing anything. We haven't gotten really necromancy-type Avengers.
Just sacrificing people, like the dark evil Avenger. Everyone's like, okay, we'll save the world. Just wait, I need to sacrifice a couple of dudes first.
Yeah.
Pray, you know, draw some like pentagrams around. It's going to be great, guys.
Here's just some bystanders Spider-Man just saved. Yeah, I'm going to have to sacrifice them so that we can do this other thing that Iron Man wants to do.
But don't worry, guys. Like, if we hadn't saved them, they'd be dead anyway. So really, they would have
chill.
It doesn't hurt at all.
Yeah, really. It doesn't hurt. we're still in front. I'll just kill three instead of five.
Exactly. We saved most of them.
There you go, Ken. It's a good, well-rounded answer.
Fair enough.
Magic Jewels Origins coming in July to a console near you.
Cool.
You get into that? I like that.
Nah.
You don't get...
It's like, when someone's like, I want to play Magic, I'm like, cool, do you have an iPad or a computer? download this game. If you still want to play Magic afterwards, hit me up. Because it's the easiest way to learn the rules. It's the easiest way to, like...
Exactly, yeah.
Like, and it's a very good program for that, but if you're an actual experienced Magic player, whatever.
That's exactly where I go for it. It's brilliant. I still like playing it just as a casual thing anyway, but, yeah, that's how I learned a lot of Magic stuff, was just by playing it on my Xbox and just doing something and going, hang on, why did that happen? And just trying to backward engineer whatever it had done, and it was, you know, a good learning tool.
Yeah, it's definitely great for new players. Like, it's a super sweet, like, the client's super great, the graphics are cool, it explains everything that's going on. And the reality is, the other option, which is for, like, more experienced players, is Magic Online, and that is the worst program ever.
It is, isn't it? Feels like taking a step back into the 80s.
Exactly. If someone goes, oh, I want to learn Magic, should I play Magic Online? The answer is absolutely not. It's like, do you hate yourself? You need to hate yourself to really want to play that. Like, it's rough.
It looks terrible. And I've told a story like about a year ago or so on the podcast where I was in the players' lounge as a beginner. In the beginners, you know, I don't know, they've got different lounges for different things. And I was in the beginners one trying to nut out, what am I doing? What cards have I got? And the other guy started getting really antsy about, can you hurry up? Can you hurry up? I mean, there's a clock. I mean, you've got 25 minutes to play. And I was like, you're in the beginner's lounge, right? If you wanted a quicker game, just go up any one of these other infinite levels that you could go up and play in there rather than hassling me out.
It doesn't get any better. Like, when you go to the higher level queues, people just double queue all the time. So, like, dudes play two games at once. So, literally, like, you have to wait. You'll sit there for, like, minutes while they're obviously playing some other turn. It's so infuriating.
Yeah.
So, it's not a great system.
So, it never speeds up. All right, welcome back. Good blob. So, spoilers. We've got Magic Origins, and we're going to be just going over a few of the details about what's in this set and what to look out for. To kick off, we've got new and returning mechanics, that some mechanics we've seen before, some have been renamed, some familiar. What have we got? Kian?
Spell Mastery is the big new one. It's the one that's the most flashy.
Yeah.
And can be the most confusing. Spell Mastery is any spell or card or whatever that will have an extra effect if you have two or more instants or sorceries in your graveyard. So
the flavor behind that is you've been casting lots of spells, you're getting good as a spellcaster, boom, here's your reward, you're getting better.
Yeah, first one, you're just trying it out, you're just testing it, you're like, okay, wait, I got this under control, now I'm a master. Third time lucky, basically.
Well, you can do it a second time, can't you?
No, because you need two other ones in your graveyard.
Oh, is it?
So third time lucky.
Well, that's it. There's the mastery.
Third time's the charm, I think, yeah.
Yeah. So is this attached to any cards of note?
A couple. There's a red fireball that costs red X that can just, like, target a creature or a player. And if you have spell mastery, it also, like, hits the creature and the player.
Oh, okay.
Which, like... that's kind of interesting. You know, red X for two targets is basically on par.
A pseudo Comet Storm from Modern Masters flashback here.
Yeah. There's the counterspell that people have been going nuts about, but it's not... I don't actually think it's...
Describe the counterspell to us, man. Let's start the story.
What are we talking about?
Two and a blue mana leak. I think it's either three or two. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah.
And if you have spell mastery, you get to scry two.
It's called Mana Leak?
So the Mana Leak effect just means you have to pay three extra mana, otherwise it gets counted. So you can't hard counter. If they've got heaps of extra mana late game, they can just pay three. Or it could be, so it's either Mana Leak, which is pay three, or Spell Pierce, which is pay two.
What other mechanics are there?
Oh, we've got another one is Renown, is the other major new player. So Renown is a mechanic where a creature starts small, and then once he attacks and does damage to a player, it gets to get bigger, so it puts counters on it. So basically an example is, there's one of the goblins, which is a red 1/1 for one goblin. It has renown 1, so when it attacks on the first turn, gets through, does damage, it gets a counter, it becomes a 2/2 guy, and gains the ability Menace, which means that it can't be blocked by only one guy. You have to block with two or more creatures. So it sort of starts as like a little guy, does some damage, gets excited, and then becomes like a renowned hero, gets like a bigger version of itself. So
again,
it's a pretty cool mechanic.
Again, very flavorful. Works really well. I like it. And there's a couple of those I noticed. There's another one with haste as well. There's like other cards that come out, and there's a lot of low cost cards in this set that seem to be getting a lot of got a lot of use out of, like, two mana. I mean, it's usually two of the same color, but they're doing a fair bit.
Yeah, One of them is Consoles Lieutenant. This card's going to wreck some dudes in Limited. It's a white-white 2-1 with First Strike. Has Renown 1.
Yep.
So when it deals damage to a player, it gets a counter.
3-2.
Yep. And it's got First Strike. So like early on in the game, it's going to be hard to block and have a good chance getting through.
Yeah.
And then when Consoles Lieutenant attacks, if it's Renowned, attacking creatures you control get +1/+1.
Yeah, man, that's pretty heavy. What rarity is that?
Uncommon.
Uncommon. Man, that's
it. So we've seen that one in Limited, so watch out.
That card's going to wreck some dudes in Limited, because I'm pretty sure it gives itself a buff.
It did seem like, when I was just scanning through the cards that have been spoiled, that blue and white did seem to get quite a big pump. I wasn't, you know, looking at the red cards, and I know a lot of people are very keen on a lot of red cards, and or green or black, but the blue and white, man, there were some cards in there that were looking good.
Yeah, I mean, they're pushing white aggro pretty heavily. I mean, there's a reprint as well of Knight of the White Orchid, which is like a classic white 2-drop, so it's 2 white for a 2-2 guy with First Strike, which is already pretty good value. But when it comes into play, if you have less land than your opponent, you get to search your library for land and put it into play untapped straight away. So basically, you just don't play your land for that turn, play your 2-drop on turn 3, search for your land, put it into play, you've ramped the land again, so you're getting way far ahead, and it's just a good thing on board. 2-2 for 2, it's exactly what you want in an aggressive deck, so they're really pushing it. There's also like a ridiculous Flying Angel for 3 white and 1 colorless, which, Kian, do you know more about that one, which I've forgotten off the top of my head, actually?
It's a 3-5. As long as Archangel of the Tides is untapped, creatures can't attack you or a planeswalker you control unless their controller pays 1 for each attacking creature. As long as Archangel of Tides is attacking, creatures can't block unless their controller pays 1 for each blocking creature. So it just like makes attacking and blocking a bit.
Yeah, it's like a great taxation effect. So there's not been many tax sort of effects in Standard for a long time. So that's a pretty neat sort of taxing effect where if your opponent needs to hold up mana if they want to attack you, if you're on the defensive, or they have to hold up mana if they want to block your guys. If you're on the beatdown plan, it's just really good. Drains your opponent's mana or forces them to take damage or not attack. So it's a neat card. It's going to push, I think, Mono White pretty heavily.
And 5 toughness, that's pretty hard to knock out the sky, right?
Exactly.
What have we got out there for removal? Is it heavy hitters?
I mean, the thing is, it dies to a bunch of the removal that just kills things, but it's great blocker in the air. Like, it blocks things like Stormbreath Dragons.
Destroy creature type.
Yeah, but there's a lot of, like, 4-power dragons.
Doesn't block Stormbreath Dragons.
Well, it doesn't block Stormbreath Dragons. Okay, what is it? Thunderbreak Region. Those sort of 4-power dragons that are hard to block in the format. So it's, there's just a lot of sort of big flyers that you want to be blocking. And like a 5-power booty is big. Like, that's a big booty.
So it's an Archangel with a big booty.
That's it. That's
all right.
So I think my, like, personal favorite thing about this entire set is most people are going to be like, Kim, what are you doing? So with core sets, one of the rules that I actually hate is whenever they reprint a card, it has to have the original art.
Really?
Yeah. So
Core sets?
Yes. Oh. So if a core set, if like a card is in a core set and it's a reprint, it always has the original art.
I never knew that.
Now, this is really exciting because we're getting a reprint that we very recently had, and the original art is way better. Dragon Fodder.
What was it? Dragon Fodder?
Yeah. Right. We get the old art Dragon Fodder, which is sick.
It does look awesome. Yeah. That's a big advantage. That's the one change.
So we've done, let's have a look. Dragon Fodder. Oh, yeah, that looks sweet. Who did that one? That is, Jamie Jones.
Yeah. So that's why, like, the Painlands look hell dodge, because the original Painlands were done, like, back in 7th or earlier?
A while back, yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Exactly. So, like, the quality of Magic artists has improved greatly.
Yeah,
partially because the artists got better, partially because technology got better.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, you've got this Battlefield Forge, which looks real bad.
Yeah. it's done with crayons. Like, yeah.
Compare that to, like, Sacred Foundry or something. Yeah. And you're like, what are we doing?
Beautiful pieces of art.
The old Sacred Foundry, Rob Alexander art. So, Rob Alexander was a quick art interlude here. Rob Alexander was over at GP Singapore as well, like an amazing artist that did.
Definitely.
A bunch of the early Shocklands, fantastic art on some of those cards. So, we all got him signed. We're all lined
way
up
too much
hours.
Money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We were all, like, fiending over his art and getting him to sign everything. It was awesome.
I bought a bunch of prints for my wall, a bunch of his, like, Shockland prints. I got Steam Vents, Sacred Foundry, Stomping Ground, Temple Garden, Hallowed Fountain, and I think that's it.
So how big are the prints?
They're A3.
A3? yeah, man, this is sounding expensive. And you got him to sign them all.
They were already signed.
Yeah,
they look beautiful as well. He's done well.
It was like $300. It wasn't too bad. It was $60.
Then you got to frame them, and then it turns out the frames always cost more than the pictures. And yeah. Anyway, so what we got? We got Menace, Renown, Spell Mastery. Anything else floating around?
Scry and Prowess are back.
Yeah.
But they're kind of back forever. So Scry and Prowess are now evergreen mechanics.
Yeah.
So that means they're on the same level as like Trample, Flying, First Strike. Yeah.
Scry did seem like that when it, the first time I played it, just a couple of sets ago. Is that the first time it came out?
No, it was
an older set.
Future Sight, right?
I think so. Okay. Yeah, yeah. That was like a sample mechanic that they're like, we might bring this in the future, in Future Sight. So.
Yeah, I see.
And they did.
Yeah. Years later. With much future sight. But that Scry does seem quite a natural thing in the game, doesn't it? It doesn't seem like one of those tricksy kind of mechanics which you got to wrap your head around and then forget in 6 months.
Well, it might become more of a core mechanic soon with the Scry rules. Is that what you were about to say as well?
Yeah. Quick, like, interlude.
Yeah. That's what we're all about today. We're just getting through this sickly. But
well, this is kind of important. Wizards is trialing a new rule at Pro Tour Origins. So at the moment, it's only in Proto Origins, and I personally feel this is the reason why Scry is evergreen. I could be wrong, but this is like...
Oh, the evergreen call was a personal Kinder Vries Turnel call.
No, but like making Scry evergreen just to put in sets didn't really make sense to me. As soon as they announced that this was the rules like for this set, I was like, now it makes perfect sense. I think they're going to implement this rule.
So let's know the rule.
The rule is if your starting hand is less than 7 after mulligans, you scry one in player order.
You scry one in player order.
So basically, instead of just mulling down to 6 cards and being like, oh man, I really need to draw a land or I'm going to like be screwed here.
You get to delve a bit.
We get to just check the top card. Is it a land? I really need that land. If it is, put it back on there. If it's not, you get to ship it at the bottom and have another chance to draw that land to make your hand
good. That's not bad. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. It's a neat mechanic. So they're trialing it, like Keen said, at the next Pro Tour. And if it works out well, I imagine they'll ship it into like a proper rule for the game.
Are we going to just see loads more people not going mulliganing down deeper as deep as you would before now and just chancing at 6 cards and then just failing really quickly?
No, I don't know about that. The thing is, people have been talking about stuff, but the reality is like you're still better off keeping, you know, your 7 cards or whatever. You're still better off keeping more cards. People are saying that potentially this gives you like an advantage for decks that like combo decks that need to dig for specific things or like decks that want certain cards on top of their deck. But the reality is like you're always wanting to keep your 7 cards rather than trying to abuse it.
Really? But I always thought you should never play on hope. If you get 7 cards and none of them are land, you don't want to be playing that, of course.
Yeah.
But the thing is like everyone's like, oh, you're going to abuse the fuck out of this. And I've actually played about 20 games of Magic with the rule.
Yeah.
So like me and my roommate, we've just been playing a lot of Magic.
Just testing it out.
And like we've just shipped the rule in, and I've now played it in Modern and Standard, both Standard without spoilers and Standard with spoilers, and it just removes the feel bad of mulligans.
Okay.
Like suddenly mulliganing to 6 doesn't feel like you're actually losing out that much. Like you're at a disadvantage, but you don't feel like you've instantly lost the game, which sometimes you did.
Yeah.
And now you just get that tiny little bit of a scry one, and it feels really good. Also, like when you,
especially if you've got a fistful of like all of the low cards that you want to start your game, you know, it's at the bottom of your curve that you want to play into. All you need is one or two lands.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
You don't want to throw those away and then draw all of your 5-cost bomb sort of cards.
Yeah. I mean, the easiest way to put it is the more Magic people play, the better the game is.
Yeah.
So dying because you didn't draw any lands, you know, and the land you needed was like one down, that's a really shit feeling.
Yeah.
But dying when you actually played Magic, that's a pretty good feeling. And this rule gets you closer to that.
I think that's the same in any sort of competition. If you play well and you lose, you just don't feel too bad. But yeah, just playing and losing because of some shitty rule or just because of some other thing that was out of your control, that always sucks. sorry, get that cough out of the way. So that was mechanics. when does that rule come in? Are they trialing it on the Pro Tour?
So that rule is only in effect for the Magic Origins Pro Tour.
Right. But on the Pro Tour. So it's not like it won't make an appearance at the pre-release or anything in local stores. It's going to be something that's going to come around if they think it's a good idea.
But here's the thing. They have to have done some serious testing behind this.
Yeah.
For them to implement this rule at a tournament where someone's walking away with 40 grand,
yeah.
like this rule has to be robust.
Yeah.
So I get the feeling that this is like
the it's kind of gonna knock
big
it back.
Reveal. And then like 2 weeks later, we get an article that's like, it did really well. It's yeah. live.
It's
like,
only going to get knocked back if everyone gets a bit grumpy about it, isn't it? And they're just going to go, oh, we can't do it because people are being just...
But even then, like...
No, they would fight.
The Pro Tour is like the epitome of magic. Like, yeah. if you're good at magic, you want to be on the Pro Tour. If you win the Pro Tour, you get like... the next season of Pro Tours because you're now like platinum level pro or whatever. Like
yeah.
to fuck with the rules just for that one tournament, they have to be really certain sure that this enough. Is a good change. Because if this is a bad change and it only shows up at this Pro Tour, this could just be like the last corset had the worst Pro Tour ever.
And that'd be good for them though, wouldn't it? You go, ah, that's why we knocked on the head because it was going down the hill.
It's a win-win either way. Either it's good, they're like, yeah. well, it's a great send-off, or it's bad, and they're like, well, that's why we send it off.
There so. We go. Exactly. It's win-win. All right, bombs. What have we seen that is going to be fun to open a pack and find?
It depends. If we're talking about fun or good, the Planeswalkers are going to be fun to open. Like, everyone yeah. likes opening Planeswalkers. They get to flip into other dudes. They're like little creatures.
That's cool,
interesting mechanics. So that'll be fun to open.
Well, if we're talking bombs, I mean, the Planeswalkers stick out. I mean, that's what's been pushed right from the start. That's what the Origins is all about. A lot of people have been rating them. A lot of people have been saying this one's better than one. There's one that's sticking out. Got any personal feelings on that, Rob?
I'm not the biggest fan of really any of the Planeswalkers, to be honest. I'm a blue guy. I love playing blue. I was hoping Jace would be good. I mean, it isn't. I mean, if you look at the Jace, like the 2-mana 0/2 Jace that then potentially flips and mills people, I mean, it's not great.
So
it's okay. Mind Sculptor, isn't it? It's because of Mind Sculptor that Jace can't be huge.
That's it. They're scared. I mean, the Jaces have usually been pretty good historically until the last one. Jace the Living Guild Pact was just utter garbage. And then this next one as well, just... I'm not going to make the call too early, I guess, but to me, it looks just terrible.
Just as bad.
So, me and my roommate were having this discussion where we were betting on which of the Planeswalkers
I was imagining
we thought
when
was
you're
the
talking
best.
About your roommate, you're just in a room having a conversation. You can't have a conversation with a roommate anywhere else but in a bedroom. Is this how it goes down? Can you just set the picture for us?
I'm generally at my computer and he's sitting on my bed, so...
Right. Are there two beds in the...
No. He's in another room, but his girlfriend's in that room and she doesn't like
his
talking
roommate,
magic.
But he's still even though you're in separate rooms.
Yeah. Maybe I should call him housemate. Maybe that's more...
That's what you want to be calling him. Yeah. Housemate. Oh, that's good. Just colouring in a bit of character for the listeners. Yeah, go on. Sorry.
So, essentially what we came down to is... For our bet, we made a bet on which Planeswalker we thought would see the most play at Pro Tour Origins.
Yeah.
And we both agreed that for the bet to be interesting, we had to remove Nissa from the bet. Because Nissa is the best of these five Planeswalkers.
Ah, right.
And we wanted to see, like, which of the other ones would see play. So Gideon, Chandra, Jace, and Liliana are all kind of good, but we don't know how good. They're all powerful and they all can do powerful things, but the flips have, like, all the flips are strings. Like, they all have strings attached.
Mm.
And that's not great. So we'll have to see which ones are best. My personal bet was on Chandra, because I really like this Chandra. This Chandra's sweet. His bet was on Jace. So
on Jace? Yeah.
There's some hope for you yet, Rob.
I'd heard that Liliana was the one. And I thought, wow, that's going to be bad for me because I just like it. I love the card just because of the art, the flavor, everything. And I thought, brilliant, that's my card just because of all of those wrong reasons for playing the card.
Now, so Nissa is definitely the breakout best one. But I don't know. I think it depends what deck's going to be popular. Like if there's a popular mono-white aggro deck, like if Craig Wesco, who just always mono-white aggro, is around, I think Gideon's going to be good. A 2-1 for 1 mana you will play anyway. Yeah. Like that's a reasonable card. In a white aggro deck, and then when you can flip it, like it's obviously got huge upside. A lot of the other ones, like you don't really want to be playing their face upside. Like in a blue deck, you don't really want to be playing a 2-mana 0/2 for Jace. So it's not really where you want to be.
Talk us through the thinking on Gideon's ultimate in inverted commas.
What's Gideon going on is there? One of those planeswalkers that doesn't have an ultimate.
Yeah, what's the deal? This is the first time I've seen that.
So, actually, all the Gideons have been like this.
Oh, right.
Like, they don't really have ultimates.
Yeah.
They have a tick-up ability, which makes dudes attack them. They have a zero ability, which makes themselves a dude that's indestructible and can attack.
Mm.
And then they have... typically, they've had like a neg ability that does something to a tapped creature. So the idea is you tick him up, they have to attack him, and then you tick him down to kill that creature. This one, however, has a smaller tick up, which just makes a creature indestructible.
Yeah, so there's no advantage to ticking him up except for making him harder to kill.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, this one's really kind of like you want to be playing it, you know, early, and then you want to attack with three guys, and you just want it to turn from a 2-1 beatdown guy into like a 4-4 beatdown guy. So you don't really want to be using too many other abilities. I mean, you can, obviously, it gives you flexibility, but really you want it to be in a white aggro deck. You're trying to beat them to death. You got your 2-1, turns into a 4-4, you keep beating them to death. That's kind of the strategy.
Yeah. And he's going to be, he's got a lot of indestructible capabilities, but he's going to be immune from all those destroy creature cards, which we were talking about earlier on.
Yeah, yeah. So he's immune to those. A problem is a lot of the ones that destroy creatures that are popular right now, like Hero's Downfall, also destroy Planeswalkers as well. So
how long's Hero's Downfall got left in it anyway?
3 months.
October.
Yeah, I thought it was getting long in the tooth.
So, hey Rob, I'm gonna run one of my favorite cards in the set past you, and we'll see if it passes or not.
Oh God, I love these challenges from Ken.
Abbot of the Keral Keep. All just right, off well. That, what color is it?
Blue.
It's a red card.
Whoa, yeah. Whoa. I would have said white or blue. Keral sounds white.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah.
Abbot of the Keral Keep is one and a red for a human monk who's a 2-1. It's rare. He's got prowess.
Okay, stop there. Okay. Stop there. So he's a 2-mana, 2-1 with prowess. Is that good, bad, ugly?
I mean, it could be good.
Okay.
It could be good.
That's all right, isn't it? That would be a reasonable...
Like, doesn't have haste? It's not Monastery Swift Spear?
No, so it's a reasonable
to come, but that's okay. Not
so
bad.
So its next ability is when it enters the battlefield, you may exile the top card of your library. You may play that card this turn. Where does that rate for you, Rob?
I think without haste, I don't know if this is great. Like, it's okay. I mean, playing on turn two, obviously, you're hoping... You can't... I mean, on turn two, its ability does nothing, obviously. On turn three, I mean, you guess you played on 2-mana, hope to hit a land that you can play for free.
Yeah.
It gives you some late game use out of this card, but the reality is, like, these kind of red decks, when you go late game, you're gonna lose anyway. I don't know.
You just want a ton of burn. Give me your sale. You want a ton of burn cards, don't you?
Yeah, but you need to pay the cost as well. So you pay 2 for this guy, and it only works that turn. So, like... You maybe on turn 4, you pay 2, play this guy, and then you flip like a lightning strike or a 2-mana damage, 2-mana burn spell.
You still have to pay the mana for that card.
If it was play for free, this card would be insanely good, but it's not.
That card would be sore bossed.
It would be really good.
So any creature card's going to have summoning sickness, so it can't do anything?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you put it into play, it's not too bad, but give me your sale. Give me your pitch on it.
Yeah.
It's just value.
I thought value. When you said this was your... I thought you had like some big story.
Yeah, I was waiting for him.
It's just... Red cards have typically been so linear in that it's just like, red cards, big dude, red cards, hit you fast. And they decided to make red more interesting in the last couple of years, and they've given red the exile effect, you know, exile top card, you can play it this turn and next turn or whatever. And it just means red is getting more interesting, which I like. You know, like, this card isn't just a beta, like, it has other uses, and that's cool.
Yeah, so the comparison's obviously with Ire Shaman, right, from the last set.
Yeah.
Which has the same ability, which is like a 2-mana 2-1, right?
And no, then, it's a 2-2.
Oh, 2-mana 2-2, so it's huge.
But it has the same ability. You have to megamorph that one.
But I mean, it's cheap to flip up as well. It's not too bad. Like this as well, you basically can't play it on turn 2 either. So like this still, you have to basically play it late on turn 3 or 4. So it's no faster than the megamorph ability.
Yeah.
If you're needing mana in reserve...
Yeah,
then
exactly.
You're gonna really need to stock your deck full of low cost cards, aren't you? Because you don't want to play it and then just draw up, you know, a 5-cost card or something like that. Because you've already played 2 to get it out there. You're gonna need 7 mana on show. That's like a turn 7.
Yeah, the dream is kind of, I guess, with this is that you play it sort of like on turn 5 or 6 as you've got they've got a board full of blockers and you're starting to lose the game. They've got the Siege Runners in play. They're on like 4 life, which is like a classic against mono red. You play this guy, you draw off the top, then you flip the top card, it's like a Stoke the Flames or a Burn spell, and you burn him to death. Because usually you draw like a 2-2 drop when the board's stalled, play it, can't do anything, and they attack you to death with Siege Rhinos. So that's the dream situation, but like, I don't know how good that is and how much it's going to come up. We'll see. I don't think this is going
to
get
much
play.
Okay,
we'll come back to this one, Kian.
Rob, this one says draw 2 cards.
Oh, yeah, sign me up.
Okay.
Sign me up for this one.
This has got to be blue.
This is a red card.
Another red card, drawing 2 cards.
This is a red card. It also costs 1, Rob. Am I tickling your fancy yet?
Oh, this man, is sounding you're great. Selling me. Okay. Where's the drawback here?
What's it called?
As an additional cost to cast Magmatic Insight, discard a land.
Oh, yes, I saw this one. This is great. I think that's a really good card for red.
Okay.
Magmatic Insight. So what's the full card?
That's it. It's one red sorcery. As an additional cost, discard a land, draw two cards.
I can see it going into Life from the Loam, like Jun decks in Modern, Life from the Loam, like Bloodgast style decks that currently play Faithless Looting as well, because those decks basically just want to constantly recur their lands, play this for one, which is going to be cheaper than sort of, you know, the similar effects besides Faithless Looting. Gives you another one you can use, pitch your land that you don't need, that you can buy back anyway. I can see this one getting played.
Yeah.
This one hooks into that thing, that initial reaction I got, where there was a lot of powerful, cheap cost cards. You don't have to have a lot of land, so these cards would be great, just being able to get card advantage at any time of the game if you're not that worried about having a lot of mana, because, you know, your dex doesn't need it.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to run a couple of the cards past Rob.
Yeah, it's been musing.
Past the team.
Yeah.
Good.
Going back to what you were saying earlier, Dave, about like what card I would pick to be the kind of like breakout card.
Yeah.
The one I have picked at the moment is called Embermaw Hellion.
This is the like the dark horse card that's not getting a lot of
press, but I think it has potential.
Yeah.
So it's a 5-mana card and it's a 4/5 and it costs 3 red. It's a rare. Has trample, which is pretty good. And it has this really weird line of text, which we haven't seen for a while. If another red source you control would deal damage to a permanent or player, it deals that much damage plus 1 to that permanent or player instead.
Man, it always takes me a while. You got your head around that, Rob? Embermaw Hellion.
I'm flicking through here looking for a picture of the card. Let's see. Pass this one over. All right.
So
we're paying 5 mana for a 4/5 trampler. Okay. It's a bit slower than Siege Runner here. If another red source,
5 mana for a 4/5 trampler is not bad. Just there, is it?
The standard at the moment is 4 mana for a 4/5 trampler that also Lightning Helix's people.
Yes.
Seems a little loose. You're paying an extra mana, and maybe like you'd have to cast 3 spells to have the similar effect. You can play it and then attack with all your tokens.
If another red source you control would deal damage to a permanent or player, it deals that much damage plus 1 to that permanent or player. Oh, okay, so it just adds 1 as something else is going to hit, right?
So notable cards are like Hordling Outburst, Dragon Fodder, Goblin Rabblemaster. You know, these are cards that like when you curve into this, it gets very scary. Because if you have 3 blockers and I have 5 tokens, suddenly instead of hitting you for 2, I'm hitting you for 4. And generally, if I've had that kind of start, you're behind already. So, like, that makes a lot of difference. But, you know, like, one of the decks I've been playing for a while, and a deck I like quite a lot, is, like, green-red kind of monsters type thing.
Yeah.
One of the cards that really shines in that deck is Xenagos. When you play this card, suddenly you're 2...
Ah, that's another red source. Yeah.
So suddenly your 2/2 satyrs are dealing 3 damage. So like they can't be blocked by Sylvan Carotid, you know, that type of thing. And
so this is doing it on planes, this is doing it on Chandra attack and anything.
Yeah, Chandra suddenly starts pinging for 3.
If you're storming across the board with 4 or 5 attackers, they're all gonna do 1 if they get if it's any permanent, isn't it? Or player. Yeah. Wow, everyone's getting 1.
It's a red card that doesn't have haste, but has a very noticeable effect on the battlefield the turn it enters, and that's the thing that's interesting. Now, unlike Siege Rhino, if it just dies immediately, it hasn't done anything, but it does have an impact on the board before they untap, which can be important, and I think this card's one to watch, because a notable thing is it does stack. So it's not legendary, and if you have 2 of them, that gets really scary. 3 of them, even scarier. And as soon as you have 2 of them, they suddenly start trading for rhinos. Not trading. They suddenly start killing rhinos. And that's pretty important.
They work on each other then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is, how many 5-drops do you want to be playing in your Dragon Fodder?
Exactly.
First Goblin Overmaster decks? Like, you're not going to be... How likely is it that you're going to be playing 2 of these on the board at the same time, right? You're probably playing, like, 2 max in your deck. Like...
But red has to have a 5-drop that does something after we lose Stormrift Dragon.
But as a pre-release strategy, if you're finding yourself in red, this is sounding like a...
Oh, I mean, any of these kind of like mythics and rares and stuff in limited aggro,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so is this... That was the Sleeping Giant. Any other hidden Sleeping Dragons?
I'm gonna continue...
Dark Horse cards?
Continue the theme by talking about red cards.
Okay.
And I'm going to talk about the...
This is your red
flavor,
card rundown for...
The flavor win in this set.
Go.
I've called the flavor judge and they approve.
Yeah, all right.
So Chandra,
yeah,
Roaring Flame, as she is known, or Chandra, Fire of Kadesh.
Are we talking about a card here?
Yeah, oh, the Planeswalker.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It's Chandra, Roaring Flame. Yeah.
Chandra, whenever she deals 3 damage to a player, she flips. So she becomes her other half. And then she's more awesome and she's Chandra the Roaring Flame and she's on a playmat and she's all pretty. Now, there's a card in this set called Chandra's Ignition.
Yeah.
And the really cool flavor thing about it is Chandra's Ignition is worded in such a way that even though it doesn't say flip target Chandra, that's what it does.
Oh, I see. The way you can do the confusing thing is how can one card do 3 damage when it's a 2/2, but you can tap Chandra, Fire of Kaladesh, deals 1 damage to target player. If Chandra has dealt 3 or more this turn, exile, I then return it to the battlefield transformed. So whenever you cast a red spell, untap this card. So you want to be cast, so I'm immediately thinking I need 3 spells.
Yeah.
To hit, do 1 damage, untap, can just keep going.
Now, if anyone ever in Standard uses this combo on me, I'm going to be like, what are you doing? Leave. But oh, the flavor judges are winning and it's a cool combo.
Yeah, yeah. I thought this was going to be... The flavor one I thought you were going to talk about was Chandra's parents.
So that's also a pretty good one.
That's the one I like, the flavor. Like, you see these planeswalkers, these great guys, you think, where have they come from? You got the origins.
Yeah.
But now, not only do you have the origin stories, but now Chandra's parents have rocked up. So, it adds a bit of a flavor issue, though. Like, you're playing the thing, you play their parents, and you've got Chandra in your hand. You have to watch your parents die on the battlefield.
Are Chandra's parents on a card?
Yeah. Kira and Kira Nalar. So it's a rare red card.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
2 colorless, 2 red for a 2/2 guy. When it comes into play, it makes 2 1/1 thopters. So
they look so in love.
Exactly. They're in love. They've made these little, like, artifact thopters. It's so cute. And then they can sacrifice them to deal 2 damage. Like, pay 3 mana, sack one of their artifact toys, deal 2 damage a thing. So it's a pretty neat little card. It's flavorful as well. Chandra's parents, mum and dad, going in there.
Yeah. Seems hard to get Chandra to flip, though. Do you think that's not going to be an easy thing to do?
I don't think it's as hard as you think. Yeah. Because some of the red decks that will be playing Chandra will have pump spells. So that allows you to flip her a little bit easier. Also, like, to flip her, you need to attack, have her hit them, then you play a spell and ping them.
Yeah,
that's the easiest way to flip her.
Yeah,
so it's not too bad. Like, if they've got an empty board or something, I mean, even if they have, like, a creature on board, like a blocker, so you play this on turn 3, you untap on turn 4, they have their blocker, then you just, basically lightning strike, or, like, tap this guy to deal 1 damage, then use a burn spell to kill their blocker, then you can attack through with Chandra, does the last 2 points of damage, because casting your spells untapped it. So then it's done 3 points of damage, you can flip it straight away.
Yeah.
So it's not too bad, as long as you have some kind of removal spell to, like, force it through on the board.
That's what it's going to come down to, isn't it? You're actually using the card's power to get your 2 up and then do the final one.
I think one of the other things you've got to think about is the type of cards that Chandra is going to be attacking with.
Yeah.
So, like, if you play a Goblin Power Driver on turn 2, and then you play Chandra on turn 3, and on turn 4 you're attacking with both of them, like... Goblin Pile Driver is a 3/2. Chandra is a 2/2. And if you've played anything else above the curve, Goblin Pile Driver could be way bigger. You know, maybe you played the 1-drop Goblin, or maybe there's a Goblin Rabble Master here somewhere or whatever. Like, if I'm attacking you with a Goblin Rabble Master and a Chandra, and the Goblin Rabble Master is a 4/2, and then I'm attacking you with 2 Goblins as well and Chandra, like, what do you block here?
Yeah.
Like, are you blocking my Rabble Master and then my Chandra gets through and I flip and I get a Planeswalker? Or are you blocking Chandra and then taking 6 from my goblins?
Yeah.
So, like, you've got to remember that red players will be able to force you into these difficult decisions.
Yeah.
And it won't necessarily be obvious which one is better or worse. And, you know, what a red player wants to do is a red player wants to deal you damage. And when you're trying to decide whether to block my Chandra or my Rabble Master, you're taking damage.
All right. Oh, why don't we do a bit of a Magic card quiz, and then we'll come back and wrap up this these spoiler sets.
MTG card quiz 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
15.
MTG card quiz. Yeah, we're back. We've had our cough break, our sneeze break. I think we're up to one sneeze in the first opening part. That was with Rob. He led with a fantastic sneeze.
I was trying to hold it back there, but I just couldn't get there.
I had several under the table coughs, but that probably came through. And Kian dropped everything he has on his body onto the table, which was quite gruesome at times. But we're here for a quiz. So, without further ado, it's question one. Magic Origins focuses on five Planeswalker characters. What are their full names? Full names.
Shit.
They're full names.
Yeah. I know Chandra's. So,
none of them have middle names. I'll give you that.
Do we mean like their...
First name, the name and their surname.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, not the card name. They're Rob Grimsey. Planeswalker.
This is actually a cool question.
Yeah. I was surprised that you were getting deep into... Like, yeah, we were talking about Chandra earlier on. We mentioned her last name several times. And I thought, damn, these guys know this. And so there's five of them. We all know it's Gideon, Jace, Liliana, Chandra, and Nyssa.
Well...
Okay. Surnames. Only if they all had parents, eh, Rob?
See, I know exactly. They're poor orphans, man. Four out of five of them are orphans. It's horrible.
All been abandoned. All right. Ah, oh, Rob's already getting into hiding answers.
I've just got answers. I don't know if they're right answers, but that's what I'm running.
Gideon Grimsey.
I'm running these answers. I mean, it's alliteration.
Jace Grimsey. Liliana Grimsey.
Got to get one, right?
One of them is bound to be related somewhere. All right, question two. I could
see Nyssa Wildsmith.
Yeah.
Wildsmith.
Yeah.
Nah, Liliana Wildsmith, man. Woof.
Jace the Wildsmith.
All right, you're familiar with Harbinger of the Tides, right?
It was spoiled at GP Singapore. Yeah. We saw it before anyone else.
Show offs. All right.
Yeah.
This is question two, word for word. What the fuck is a Harbinger? What is a Harbinger? And Collins Dictionary gave me a definition, including a use of the word, which really probably doesn't help us. All right. Question three. The five Planeswalker characters mentioned earlier in Magic Origins all have home planes where they originated from. Can you name them? So the five Planeswalker characters in Magic Origins all have home planes where they originated from. Name them. I know of two.
I don't know anything about the lore, so I think I've got one.
So this is where it'd pay off to listen to Aaron Graham's Stories of Magic.
So like the thing is with knowledge is because I know Aaron knows this, I have the knowledge in the sense that I can just call Aaron and be like,
yeah,
hey, man,
that's how
I don't need to actually spend the mental energy to know it.
That's why in life I have that problem. If there's someone else in the room who I know knows the answer, my brain just shuts down. It
exactly.
Just goes, no point, just ask them.
Exactly, you have the access to the answer on your fingertips.
I'm pretty sure this is partially a trick question.
Oh, there's no trick from me.
We don't know one. I'm pretty sure we don't know one of the home planes.
Well, what was it? My sources seem to be very confident about about the home planes. Because they also had the Planeswalker, the home plane, and then there was the first Planeswalk plane that they're attached to as well.
Ah.
And I don't know what that means. That would be the first time, from their story, I imagine that's the first time that they planeswalked to somewhere else from their home plane.
Yeah.
But for now, just what the home plane is.
Okay, because I didn't think we knew where Jace was from.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I have one now. I have one here. I haven't heard of it. But that means little. All right.
Rob looks like
MTG.
He's
MTG card quiz. Let's go back to the top of the list. Magic Origins focuses on five Planeswalker characters. What are their full names? Kian, what do you got for Gideon?
Blank.
Blank. How do you spell blank? No.
Okay, Rob? I've got Gideon Jura.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, it's Gideon Jura.
Oh, boom.
So that's number one. Let me get my score sheet going here.
I just need to try and remember K what and, the original set names are. And
he was
can't
talking so much smack at the start of this as well, man. Yeah, he was.
Off air. It was all. What were the words, Ken? You were going to give, hand
gonna
out a beatdown?
Destroyed.
Down?
I think I was going to get destroyed.
Destroyed.
Destroy you, I think, right. was the key term.
All right. So Rob is one up already. All right. Jace, you want to lead off with that one, Rob?
Jace Balerin?
I had Valerin.
Valerin.
Nice B, buddy. You're out. Man. You're out.
Well, points for honesty, but not points that are going down on the score sheet.
I'm letting him answer first, man, because I think he does not know the answers.
Okay.
C. Kian.
For which one?
What's the first one?
C. Oh, Liliana. Sorry, I forgot that you didn't have the list that I've got.
Is it Liliana Vest?
Oh, come on. You must know.
Yes. Yes, it is. Oh, my God. It's so bad.
3-0. You're going to eat the dick here, Kian.
Oh, man. Kian. Chandra.
Naylor.
Yes.
Did
you happen to have that one, Rob?
I did have that one, yeah.
And Kian. Nyssa.
Nyssa Ravine.
Yeah.
Well, hang on, what?
Ravine?
What have you got?
That's what I've got as well.
Oh, isn't it Ravine?
Oh, well, I have the pronunciation.
I just may not know how to say it.
All right, we'll give you a point. I thought Nyssa Ravine, just like a stream bubbling through a valley.
I kept trying to remember what the original five planeswalkers were called, and I couldn't for the life of me.
Sorry, I don't have, I've only got two of the next answers, so you got a chance here. Or three, but I think they're both all wrong, though.
Well, look, I think in question three out of the five seem really difficult to me. But, you know, I don't know my mythos, my mid-magic mythos.
Same.
Question two. What the fuck is a harbinger?
So my description is very, very accurate here. Very descriptive. It says something that precedes a thing. Like a harbinger of doom is something that precedes, like a herald sort of, that precedes the doom.
Right.
That's my guess.
That's your definition. Kian?
The person or thing that warns of a negative something.
Right.
There has to be a negative commentation for it to be a harbinger.
I think the less you say now, Kian, the bits that you added to your definition were incorrect, and then you just coloured in extra. It doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Oh, really?
No. It's a personal thing that announces or signals the approach of another.
I thought that was a herald.
Well, so eventually I said like this, herald. That's a similar thing.
There are synonyms in our language.
Similar thing.
Okay, because I thought herald was positive, harbinger was negative.
Well, Collins Dictionary says, witch hazels are the harbingers of spring. Delightful.
Yeah, perfect.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So it can
be
nice.
I'll take that.
Yeah, so I'll give you both a point for that. I've forgotten if I've given you a point already, so I'll just make it 3-6.
What?
3 to Kian, 6 to Rob.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, you're in a bad way. Nice. All right, this is where you can come back. Don't forget, we've got flavor text coming up later on, which you can probably come back.
So and, flavorful.
Yeah. So the five planeswalker characters in Magic Origins all have home planes where they came from. Can you name them? Gideon, where did he come from?
Theros.
That's what I got as well, man.
All right, that's a point each. They're both from... Gideon is from Theros. Anyone got anything else?
I've got Zendikar for Nyssa. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Zendikar Nyssa. That's a thing.
That's correct. All okay. Right. So that's the two that I knew.
So Chandra. I have Chandra. Do you have Chandra?
No.
What have you got for Chandra?
Kaladesh.
Oh, Ken, back. That's correct.
It's on the card.
Oh, really? Oh, shit.
Chandra Flame of Kaladesh.
I didn't read the cards. That's the problem.
So, you just did, 5 minutes ago. That's the first time I've ever seen it.
So, do you remember the last time we were here, Rob?
He's getting smug.
We were talking about Chandra, like the spoiled Chandra that, you know, was fake. That people were like, this card has been...
Yep.
That people were like, this card has been proved fake.
Yep.
It is the actual card that we got in the end. But the reason it was proved real, again, was because we didn't know Chandra's home plane, and an article came out with Chandra's backstory that mentioned her home plane, and the card that someone was like, this is fake, had her home plane on it, which is information you could not have known.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's interesting backstory there.
That's some Sherlock Holmes shit going down there.
Yeah.
All right. Liliana?
Innistrad?
No, I have no idea.
Well, interestingly, Innistrad was the first plane that she planeswalked to.
Oh, that makes sense.
However, her home plane is Dominaria, which you could probably about remember. She's got the dominatrixy black, you know, look going for her, but yeah, I never even heard
judge
of that.
People by their looks, Dave. Come on, what's
I'm
going
not
on?
Judging her. There's no judgment there. I love it.
She looks like a dominatrix. She must be from Dublin area. That's judging her by her looks, I think.
Hey man,
the definition of judging someone by their looks, basically.
Looking Asian, you might come from Asia. I don't judge you for it. All right. So no one's got anything for that. And Jace,
I got nothing.
Theros. No, not Theros. Ravnica.
Ravnica was the first Planeswalk plane.
Damn it!
And he was from a place called Vryn, V-R-Y-N.
So Keen's calling back. He's called back 1 point.
He has.
Hold on, isn't that what I said his last name was?
No, you said Velaryn.
No, I said...
No, you said Velaryn.
You said Velaryn. It's like Velaryn.
Okay. 100%, that's what you said.
Okay.
Jace Bellend.
Does the original Planeswalk plane get like half a point?
Well, I got half a point for the other one, so it would be equal anyway.
Yeah, no. So, Kian, you're on 6. Interesting. Seems like Jason's trying to break into the pod right now. And, Rob, you're on 8. So, 6-8. That's doable. It's going to be a tight one. It's going down to the wire. Just out of interest, first Planeswalk plane for Gideon was Bant. Jace was Ravnica. Liliana was Innistrad. Chandra was Regartha. And Nyssa went to Lorwyn.
Oh, good old Regartha.
Yeah.
Oh.
Fucking Regartha, man.
Yeah, man, Jesus.
All right, that was MTG Card Quiz. All right, Magic Origins. After a very tight quiz, I might add. It's going down to the wire there. We're looking at a pre-release coming up on next weekend, Friday midnight coming up. How are we going to play Magic Origins? Is there anything different? Is there some bog-standard rules what we need just for how you go into a sealed tournament?
Yeah, sealed, so just a standard sort of sealed rules. Like, you're just looking at this set is like a mono-coloured set, so you're going to be looking at playing, you know, one main colour. So either, you know, you pick your favourite colour, you're going to be mono-green, you're going to be mono-red, you're going to be mono-white, but then you'll usually splash a second colour. So normally most of your cards are going to be whatever colour you've got the most reasonable playables for.
Yeah.
And then you'll be splashing into a second colour for if you've got, like, you know, a special bomb that's in a, you know, a different
So you shouldn't be shy about going completely mono-colour.
Different sets are different, obviously. So, like, this one is, like, the core sets are usually push towards monocolor, so you play mainly one color, splash a second color. There's not really any mana fixing, so like you can't. There's no dual lands or anything in the core set. Oh well, there's rare dual lands, pain lands, but you're not really going to open those realistically.
I suppose going mono isn't going to help with those wild. With those low cost cards that have you know, like just plains or, you know, mountain. If you're playing mono, you don't have to even worry about that, do you? You've got two mana, you're playing them.
You typically want a mana ratio of like 9 and 7 in a core set. So you want to be base one color, splashing another. There's a cycle of 10 cards.
So you play 16 lands. That's what you're saying.
You play
10
lands.
And 7.
Yeah.
10 and
17 lands. Yeah.
There's a cycle of 10 cards that are one each for the different guild pairings. So every two-color pairing has a special uncommon card, which is fairly powerful. So if you open two of those, which are the same, that might force you in one particular direction.
Yeah.
They're cards that are worth noting that might dictate you towards a certain color pairing.
Right.
But really, you just pick your two colors with the most playable cards in sealed, pretty much. So
follow your rares.
Yeah.
Practically. Yeah. So you're cracking the first pack. You've got a... I suppose the usual idea is just to have a look over what rares are. Banging rares. If you open one of those, you're just keeping it, and that's what you're going with, or are you looking at
the
second
pack? It depends what your other playables are. So like if you have one super good, like say a red rare, but all the rest of your stuff, you know, is all blue and green, you might play sort of like, you know, splash one or two mountains and try and just jam that rare in there and play it.
Yeah.
Like if you have an amazing red rare, but like most of your red cards are just garbage otherwise, you can't really push towards a mono deck. So it's really sealed is really just dictated by what you open up. You just want to try not to be super aggressive. Like sealed is just a bit of a slower format, so a lot of guys make the mistake of thinking it's sort of similar to draft and pack a lot of, like, you know, like two drops in and try and make it beatdown decks.
Yeah.
But it doesn't quite work out too well. Like, you don't normally have enough critical mass of those cards to make it good enough. So you really want to be aiming for like a slower, like mid-rangey style sealed deck, which is the standard.
That's good advice. So are the pre-release packs, when you get your coloured pack, do we know how they're structured this
yes.
release?
Yes. You get a seeded pack and 6 boosters.
So the seeded pack this time, rather than being like a 15-card pack, there's only 7 cards, I believe. It's only 7
a smaller color. Amount,
right.
But they're all in whichever color you chose.
Yeah.
There'll be your promo, which will either be a rare or a mythic.
Which you know about before you've even opened it, because it's on all the posters.
Isn't it a random selection? It's not set anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, what the foil, the pre-release card, though? Aren't they always on the
No, so like what used posters? To happen was every color had the same promo. Like if you played black, you would always have the same promo.
Yeah.
But what used to happen was there would always be one that was just way better than the rest. So if you actually wanted to win the packs, everyone, you were sort of forced into picking one color that had the bomb rare.
Yeah.
So they've changed that now. I'm not 100% certain they're doing this set, but I believe they are. Is they have a range of rares. Like the last few pre-releases, you pick blue and there'll be like 10 different promos you could potentially get.
Yeah.
Eight
has been the number.
Yeah. So there's a range. So like you're not really priced into going a certain color if you want to be competitive. Like now it's, you know, you pick a color and you could get a really competitive rare or maybe not, but you're not forced into picking like a specific color to be competitive now.
No, that's good, because then you'd have to go all alpha male at the beginning of the tournament.
Yeah, everyone just rushes in for like, you know, the huge green bomb or whatever it is.
Yeah,
so.
That sucks a lot of us.
Yeah.
So other general seal tips on, or anything that's similar, or anything that's pretty remarkable about this set in its own right?
Pretty straightforward. I mean, it's a core set. There's nothing too outrageous. All the mechanics are fairly straightforward. It's going to be good for new players to get into.
Hmm.
The removal is, like, not that great. Like, it's your basic core set. Like, there's not much to say. Like, the elves are back. Like, each color even has its own, like, mini archetype of stuff to play. You know? Like, everything is just going to work out. It's pretty straightforward. Like, green is big dudes, blue likes flying, red is fairly aggressive, black has some big dudes, likes discard, white, you know, has some angels and some other stuff. And
is life Aaron Graham going to be going to this thinking, blue-white all the way?
100%.
Yeah. So would you just study up on, like, if you're a newish player, come into the pre-release, study up on the bread, you know, breakdown, you know, the bombs, the rares, evasion, attack, and then the D? So let's get a good bit of a feel about what's what in each color. Does that still play out?
Yeah. The most important thing, like, the most important thing about Magic...
Or am I confusing it with drafting too much?
No, it's still the same. I mean, like, obviously, like, with drafting, it's your actual pick order. So, like, if you don't pick the bomb, like, you know, you're going to miss out on it. Whereas in Sealed, like, you don't really have much choice. Like, you open the pack, and you see what your bombs are, and you've got them, basically.
Yeah.
So, pretty much, like, everything you want to play, all your bombs that you can fit in your deck, all the good removal you can fit in your deck, just the standard kind of Sealed strategy.
The thing is, like, for close to a year now, we've been playing in this world of Khans, where when you open a seal pool, the first thing you had to try and figure out was, what can my mana support?
Yeah.
You know, like, what three-color card combination do I play? Because that's where my mana is. You don't have to worry about this for your set. For this set, all you have to worry about is, what are my best cards? I'm going to play those. Because I've been that dude who's opened a really good rare, but it's outside of my three colors and I couldn't play it.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the case this time. Just see what your good cards are and play them.
Okay, so what I was thinking about was, what happens, you know, you've got your sealed pool there, you don't have a lot of removal, for example. Is there a strategy you can take then where you're thinking, right, I'm not going to be able to knock them out of the sky, I'm going to go for that pacey deck? Is other counter strategies like that you can employ?
Yeah, I mean, the thing if you don't have a lot of removal is you just play a bunch of creatures and then you use your creatures as pseudo-removal in the sense of, like, you block their creatures with your creatures and trade them off rather than just having just direct removal. And then a lot of core sets are like that. Typically, like, there's not a lot of amazing removal in core sets or it's expensive.
Yeah.
Hashtag Cone of Flames last year.
Yeah, well, Cone of Flames was busted. But, I mean, there's not normally too many cards like that.
There's this concept which... is a little bit difficult to explain. There's no, like, rule about it. But the concept is, like, if you know you have a bad deck, you have to take risks to win.
Okay.
So if I have the most amazing deck ever, generally all I have to do is I have to play conservatively, not overextend.
Pilot correctly.
I'll win the game.
Yeah.
But if I have a bad deck, I just have to take risks. So suddenly you have to play more aggressively than you normally would. Or maybe you have to try and bluff something or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, mono red in Constructed is a very good example of this. My deck's not very good, so I just have to overextend and kill them. You know, that's a very fine-tuned version of that. In Limited, it's, you know, a lot more flexible and less linear, but that is something you should bear in mind. If you don't think your deck is very good, you suddenly have to play very differently.
Yeah, so, like, holding back mana for cards that you... don't have in your hand, but might have in your hand. That sort of stuff, yeah?
Yeah, it's more like you just want to jam. Like, you might, if you have like a pretty average deck that you think is not going to be winning the long game, like, you just want to sort of slant it to be as aggressive as possible. So you bust like all your aggressive-ish creatures and you sort of try and kill the other player before they get to set up the decks. Because if yours is, you believe is just worse, you don't want to go to like a long game.
Yeah, because they're just going to grind you in eventually.
So you want to just kill them before they get to draw their, you know, better deck, basically.
All right, so we're on the eve of the farewell of the core set, guys. Anything we're going to say about it before we head out?
It's a core set. It's going to be good fun to play, but it's going to be fairly bland, and we'll be excited when Battle for Zendikar's here.
Yeah, I'm ready for the next set already, I think. I mean, Modern Masters was great. It was exciting. There was lots of cool stuff going on in the draft.
Yeah.
Origins is pretty much at the opposite end of the spectrum. It's very straightforward. Like, there's monocolors. There's nothing really too exciting.
That's the charm of it.
No interesting mechanics, really. I don't know. It's fine.
It's core magic.
It's just about the definition of just fine. That's where we're at.
Yeah, it's fine. I suppose for, you know, experienced players, you know, you like yourselves that have done tournaments and lots and lots and lots of games, it can be a bit tiresome. But for casual players or for beginner players, it's friggin' exciting, you know, and there's a lot of these characters are there, you know. Yeah. Yeah, but you're saying homage.
Homage.
It's paying homage, but from you're saying that in the worst sense, aren't you? That it's just going to be plain.
No, like...
It's going to be core.
It is going back to what the core set is. You know, it's like we play monocolors. You know, I said it earlier, like, elves are back. Like, I remember the first core set I ever played, like, the big things was elves and goblins, you know, like, red was goblins. Green was elves, and, Goblin, you know, we've got those guys back. There was even, like, smattering of merfolks, and, you know, like, white had all the knights, and, you know, black had all the zombies, you know, like, and it's not going the full wholeheartedly at that, like, other core sets have, but, you know, it's playing, it's you know, tipping
it's
the hat.
It's been magic. It's been magic, isn't it? Yeah. All right, well, let's do some flavor text. Flavor text. It's flavor text. This week, quirky flavor text, like salted caramel, I put here. After telling an interesting story about having a problem spelling quirky, I realized that it was about this week's flavor text. All of these cards have quirky flavor text, according to the internet. All right. We'll start off. Are you ready? Pins ready. What's the score? It was 6-8 or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think I'm up. Let's see it. How many of these have we got? So how many points can I afford to give here?
You can afford to give 2.
No, I get that. How many flavor text questions have we got though?
3. There's always 3. Oh, wow. 3 cards.
But how many points are up for grabs?
3
points, Kim.
Only 3 points.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you got to get all. So you gotta kill it.
What, Rob, I'm going to ask you an honest question. What do you think the percentage chance is that by the end of this flavor text...
Turn around.
...the score is the same?
Like, pretty high. I think there's a pretty high chance.
I'm pretty sure that you're going to nail one of them, and the other two are just for lols, I would say.
All right, let's see this. All right. As voted by the internet, these flavor texts.
Yes, part of a long list of quirky cards. Okay, I'll give you a good description of the card as well, I think. But the flavor text for the first one is... He raged at the world, at his family, at his life, but mostly he just raged.
This card is beautiful.
It's a Cairns confidant. Oh, Rob's lost.
No, I don't read the flavor text.
Oh, am I going to give a rundown of the card if this is the way it's going to pan out?
This is like from one of my favorite cards from back in 8th edition. This is beautiful.
From 8th edition? What card?
I think it's from 8th.
I've got it on an M10 card here.
Oh, okay.
But that's, you know, perfectly reasonable.
I have memories of this as like... one of the first cards I ever, like, fully understood in Magic.
Wow.
When I was, like, 7.
the turnaround could be on. All right, question 2, flavor text, quirky flavor. When times are tough, the poor eat the rats. When times are tougher, the rats eat the poor. Oh, I thought you knew that one.
No, I have no idea. Like I said, I don't really read the flavor text on cards.
Oh.
But we'll see. Yeah, I can try and guess it. Some kind of rat?
Pack rat.
When times are tough, the poor eat the rats. When times are tougher, the rats eat the poor. Still, build your excitement at home. This could be the big turnaround that we've been waiting for all these years.
Oh,
all right, question 3 in quirky flavor is like an avalanche with teeth that will chase you uphill. And that was said by Flintfoot Viashino runner. Viashino runner. This was at the top of someone's list for quirkiest, favorite quirky flavor. So, like an avalanche with teeth that will chase you uphill. It's from 10th edition.
Oh, well, that's definitely not this then.
It's a sorcery card.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, that's not that one then.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm.
It's a sorcery.
Yeah. All creatures get plus X, minus X until end of turn. It's a shit piece of art as well. It could just... This looks like a leaf that's blown up against the wall.
I think we might...
Plus X, minus X. I can't even think of any card that does that. Oh, well, cool.
Yeah. All right.
I think you're safe on your throne.
Yeah, we're doing
well. No, it
because for number two, we both put the same.
Okay, good, good. I got nothing. I got nothing for the other two. So,
all right. So, Kian, you're on six. Rob, you're on eight. Let's take them backwards then, hey? Because it could. Oh, no. So the stupid one, which I put down because someone had it as this is the quirkiest card flavor text ever. Like an avalanche with teeth that will chase you uphill. Flintfoot Viashino runner. Anybody got any kind of...
Absolutely nothing. I was thinking Avalanche Tusker from the most recent set. I can't. That's...
I was thinking Blade Tusk War.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's Flowstone Slide from 10th edition. Which is X and two colorless.
You got us.
Yeah, it's absolutely...
So what does it do? Read what is the card? X and two colorless.
X, two colorless, and two mountain.
Yep.
For a sorcery, all creatures get plus X, minus X until end of turn.
Ooh, so it's like four mana and X.
Yeah, four mana.
I can see that was like totally unplayable. That seems
It sounds like it, doesn't it? But so it's like an avalanche with teeth that will chase you.
Removal.
But for your own dudes, like one side, I guess it's like Savage Twister, just real bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so expensive, isn't it? And it's sorcery speed for your extra bonus.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So question two as we work backwards. When times are tough, the poor eat the rats. When times are tougher, the rats eat the poor. You both got the same answer,
relentless
I see.
Relentless rats are going for?
Relentless rats.
Drainpipe vermin.
There we go. Both wrong. Good job.
Both wrong.
I knew it was some kind of rat. I'm like, that's a rat I can think of.
Because you got to just take a stab at a rat. And this is Kian's glowing moment here.
Kian's wheelhouse here, this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. He raged at the world, at his family, at his life, but mostly he just raged for a one mountain, for a 1/1 creature goblin berserker. Rob, anything?
Nothing at all.
Who is it?
Raging Goblin.
Raging Goblin.
I was like, in my head, I'm like, it's got to be some kind of goblin, but that's about all I got.
Yeah. All right. So, Rob, you win on nine, and Kian got there on seven. No, you got none on that, didn't you? I gave you a point. You got eight, and Kian got seven. So It was close.
We did it.
Need some twos! Guys, still with us?
Shit, what are we saying here?
Just, tweet, you know, enthusiasm. Tweet. People have been talking to us.
Oh, yeah, shit.
Tweet some twos!
Tweet, tweet. Woo! Neat! Woo!
And twos. Twos.
Twos.
And neats.
Yeah, that's why I'm going to tweet, 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 tweet.
All right.
Hey, this last week we've had a few people been talking about all the new cards. And like there was, for example, well, this might cost us half a Magic Nerd badge if he's listening. Matthew Costa was just talking about he's only interested in Harbinger of the Tides because of his Merfolk collection. Yeah. That can't be real. Merfolk collection.
Yeah, I mean, but Merfolk's great. Like, Merfolk won. Like, there was two Merfolks in one of the most recent modern
GPs. But they were so horrible and, like, pathetic-looking creatures for a while. And then they went completely evil in the last couple of sets. Last time, last couple of appearances.
The fish tribe. Like, how can you not be behind the fish tribe?
Ruins a fishing day out. You know, you're fishing for salmon or something. All of a sudden, you catch a guy with a tail or something with gills.
It could be a chick with a tail. It could be a love story. It's start of, like, an epic love story. It doesn't have to be a guy that you catch. You never know.
Could be a musical.
Oh, it's not the guy or the girl. It's just, like, a human head with a fish hook through its cheek. It's like, oh, sorry, dude. Didn't mean to drag you onto the beach. This is a bit grotesque, isn't it? Anyway. Bree Bowen got in touch. So basically the post that we put out was talking about the two cost cards being spoiled for Origins, such as Harbinger of the Tides, hence Matthew's blurb about the Merfolk. But Bree's particularly pumped about Goblin Piledriver. She's saying, just yes, oh my god, yes, Rabble Master on steroids. By the way, I'm after a playset on Origins release of Goblin Piledriver. She's got a foil Kiki Jiki for trade, anybody who's going to bump into her on Origins pre-release. Well, Goblin Piledriver, what do we think about that card, fellas?
That card's great.
If you like driving piles, man, this is
and with the goblins
for you. Yeah, this is it. No, this guy's great.
We mentioned this guy earlier on, right?
So this is the first reprinting of Piledriver in any modern legal set. So Piledriver is one of the key cards in Legacy Goblins.
Yeah.
So it makes the deck amazing. So
protection from blue.
Yep.
So I just run over what it shows. So colorless and a mountain for protection from for a 1/1/2 with protection from blue. Whenever Goblin Piledriver attacks, it gets +2/+0 until end of turn for each other attacking gobbo. Doesn't say gobbo on the card.
Doesn't say each attacking goblin?
For each other attacking goblin, yeah.
So it doesn't include itself.
I thought it was a 3/2 on its
own. No, it doesn't include itself.
No, it gets to be 3/2. It gets +2/+0 until end of turn for each other attacking goblin. So you go gobbo army. This guy is monstrous, right?
This card's nuts.
That's why, hence, Bree wants a playset. Kiki Jiki.
It's great. I mean, it's just great. It's one of the key cards in Legacy Goblins. So there's a bunch of great goblins in Legacy. It's never been legal in Modern before, so this is going to be the first printing where now you can play Modern with Piledriver as well. So it was only in Legacy previously. And it's just great. I mean, there's other cool cards that go with it, like Subterranean Scout in this one, where it's just a goblin. When you play it, you get to make a target creature with power 2 or less unblockable. So you play it in your main phase, and then obviously Piledriver is only 1/2, so you make it unblockable. And then you go to attack, and obviously Piledriver gets huge then, but still unblockable, so you get to feed in a bunch of damage. That same card also works with Rabble Masters, so they start 2/2, but then when they attack, they get huge, so you can make them unblockable. It's just great.
So are we going to see the Gobbo army coming back with force?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the goblins are already like... there's already Mono Red, which plays a bunch of goblins, and this card just slots into that deck perfectly. Great with tokens.
I think it's such a fun deck to play, isn't it? Because you've got all the burn there to back you up, and you've got gobbos. You can relate to goblins. Everyone can relate to goblins, right?
Oh, so, absolutely. Yeah. Get them in there, I think.
And it's not just us and Bree that are going crazy about this card, Goblin Piledriver.
Local player David, what's his second name?
Chamberlain. Not just Chunks.
I just know him as Chunks. Chunks has been playing Legacy Goblins for many years. He played it back when it was in Standard. He has played it in both the Legacy leagues quite a lot, and he's finally going to be able to sleeve it up in Modern and Standard. And he is very excited. He's a Rabble Master aficionado, and he's looking forward to slamming some piles into just everyone.
All right. Well, so thanks for getting in touch with us, Bree. If you're in store, hit one of the guys up for a Hyper Magic Nerd badge. We'll leave that at the counter for you. Anyone else, please get involved. We'll make babies with your feedback, but please don't be shy. We're very gentle. And you too could get a Hyper Magic Nerd badge like Bree will be doing. Don't forget to tune into Board Game Show for discounts and deals on the games we review. In a fortnight's time, we're doing a dinner party grab bag of gamage. We're doing small box favorites. You know the sort of stuff you take around someone's house when they're not gamers, and you go, you guys need to be gamers. Let's just play Coup or something like that. And they play it and they say, no, this isn't as complicated as I thought. I thought what you did was really complex. And you go, thanks very much, but it's just, I have simple alternatives as well. That sort of thing. That's what we're going to be reviewing, but not Coup. I think we're doing King of Tokyo, Love Letters, and Timeline.
The classics. Nice choice.
Some of the classics.
Godzilla.
What, in King of Tokyo?
Yeah.
Godzilla-ish.
I thought you were asking a question.
What was the question?
King of Tokyo. Love Letter.
Yeah.
Something else. I was like, Godzilla. I wanted to make sure I beat Rob.
It's a draw. 8-all.
I think you lose points for that. Actually.
Yeah, probably.
I'm up 2 points now.
Yeah, bang on. So convert your non-gamer friends into cosplay-wearing nutcases, sexy nutcases if you can, and tune into the Board Game Show and get discounts on. We'll sort something out for you with our sponsor, Good Games St. James. Oh, no, Good Games Cannington. Where do you get that right? And that's about it, fellas. We're going to head off. And what are you going to do?
Hearthstone.
It's an addict.
To get some recovery, I think. Thanks for listening, dudes. It was great.
Let's go get some pseudoephedrine into us, Rob. Woo.
Excited. It's
all right. All right. We'll close up and sign off.
My name is Kian DeVries-Turnell, and I'm reporting from the RPG room at Good Games Cannington. I'm here with my good friend, Rob Grimsey, and we've recorded a great podcast, and we're heading home to our hot chocolate.
Hot chocolate. Hot chocolate.
Mm.
Oh, thanks for coming in, Kian. Thanks for coming in, Rob. Man, we're the sickest pod group ever. Except for you, Kian, you've healed up. So we made it. Yeah, we're fully sick.
I love how I'm, like, healed up, and then I came here, and I'm 100% sick. Thanks,
look,
guys.
The pod is medically sealed, but it sucks all germs out, so we'll all be cured after this.
So, Rob, final question for the day. What do you think the odds are that the CDC is outside there?
Hopefully.
See you all in 2 weeks after quarantine.
See you all for Origins Breakdown in a month's time. Good night.
Oh, we did it.